Hello and welcome back to Lit, episode 14, Locating Perfection. Sorry about that cliffhanger in part A. It is now part A. Life interrupted me, and I needed to respond to the call. So we're going to do this episode in two parts. I thought about getting rid of that audio. I have very low-tech audio for this, so I thought about getting rid of that audio. Doing it all over, but I re-listened to it and I thought, you know, I don't know if I can recapture the stuff I was saying in that first part. So this is part B. And where I left off in part A, I was saying that we need a new approach to this vision setting. And one of the things I want to call attention to in the question that my dear friend asked was, he said, in the beginning, he said, I want to be a paragon of health for my patients. And I want to just look at those last three words, for my patients. What if he had said, I want to be a paragon of health for myself? And this comes back to a crux that I bring up, that I've brought up before and I will certainly bring up again, which is this idea in oftentimes, especially in helping professions, but really anywhere you go, that somehow we've conflated the idea of self-advocacy with selfishness, or we've conflated this idea of self-advocacy with entitlement. And they're two very, very different things. And they come from two very, very different places. I believe self-advocacy, and I did a whole episode on self-actualization. So maybe in the future I should do a whole episode on self-advocacy. But the idea of self-advocacy comes from the heart. It comes from something deeper within us that looks around and says, I deserve a life that reflects my strengths and my desires and my passions. And when we talked about earlier about doing that inner work first, this is where I believe true change emerges from. Whereas something like entitlement or selfishness, that comes from a much different place. That comes from a surface level. That comes from your ego. And your ego, remember, is the part of you that believes it's separate from everything else. And where we are as a culture is we will often mistake these two things. And I know a lot of people, and I've mentioned this before, but I mean, I grew up as a woman in the Midwest where we were taught to be self-effacing in a lot of ways. And I know I've mentioned this, but often I would see like women around me while I was growing up, like try to always disperse tension or disperse conflict, often at their own expense, often at being self, kind of self-deprecating or self-effacing, and making themselves the butt of jokes just to make people laugh and to move tension along or whatever. And what I'm saying is that we have this cultural, oftentimes, and it's not just women in the Midwest. It's like that is something much larger. That was just kind of an example I'm using. But we have this cultural idea that self-advocacy is inherently selfish. And I want to debunk that myth. In the book I'm writing, I have a whole chapter called Objections. And the idea is that people come up with objections to against transforming their lives or transforming their companies or their organizations into ones that really value humanity and that are human-centered or value-centered. And there's this persistent cultural myth that it's indulgent to follow your heart. And there's a related cultural myth, especially in helping professions, that is somehow that there's this nobility in sacrifice, in self-sacrifice, that there's a nobility in it. And And something that I'm really working against is this thought that following your heart is actually oftentimes takes more discipline and more grit and much more internal growth than it does to stay somewhere that seems safe. And for the other one, the idea that self-sacrifice is noble, I come back to Parker Palmer's definition of burnout, which is burnout isn't giving too much. It's giving what you don't have. And if you are constantly giving something that you do not have, you're not actually making the world a better place. You're not actually accomplishing the things that you want to be accomplishing, because you're hurting. You're in pain. You're suffering. You're empty. You feel empty. You feel drained. You feel worn out. And you can't give that light, that energy, that sparkle. You can't give that to those around you. So I want to reframe this idea of giving, of being a paragon, being a role model for my patients. And what if instead it was, I want to live a life of health because it's what I deserve. Because I want this, and I want to be my best self, and I only get one life. I only get one chance at this life. And I want it to be the best that it can be. And if you think about those people who live like that, truly, when they touch you, it can brighten your whole day. It can raise like the frequency or the energy level or the amount of just love in the world. I think of people who live like that, and those are the people I go to when I'm lost or when I have questions. And I never fail to come out of it with a sense of, oh, peace. You know, they can bring me back to my center. And imagine if you could be that person. And so wherever you go, you are the light that's shining, because you decided that it wasn't selfish to live the life that you want and that you believe you deserve. So I realize that as I'm talking very high level there, right? There's I want to bring it down to like the question at hand, right? So the question is, how to be this role model of health, right? And then the whole next episode, I'm going to get into the time, the energy, the resources, the feeling of scarcity around that. But for this episode, I want to talk more about just this part about being a paragon of health for my patients, and maybe shifting that first to how can I be a paragon of health for myself, and how can I believe that I have a right? I think that my friend who's a doctor spends a lot of his time talking to patients about how they have a right to be healthy. He mentioned that he had to talk to some patient about how it was okay to need 8 hours of sleep a night. That's okay. And meanwhile, that same feeling of like self-chastisement for having needs and for having desires, it's being turned inward. Right? So thinking about even just listening to yourself when you talk to other people, some of the greatest wisdom is in the things that you say to others. How often I'm in workshops, people take notes on everything that everyone else is saying. They don't take notes on things that they're saying. And what they're saying is really the key to their own wisdom, right? So I would advise you to listen to yourself often when you're in that place. Now, I want to also now talk about the idea of health. So let's start with that definition of health. What does that mean? To be healthy, to be a, my guess is that, and you're, you know, he's a doctor, so I'm sure he's got a 1,001, you know, really deep and esoteric ways to think about health. But if we kind of take a step back and say, what does it mean for you to be healthy, right? Every person is different. And research shows that health starts with your inner state. The way that you approach life has a palpable effect on your physical health. We know study after study after study, stress, overwhelm, burnout, it breaks down your body. It creates untold. I saw a study that said burnout and stress can lead to death. It doesn't get much more serious than that, right? That to be stressed out, it can kill you. And it certainly shortens your life, and it certainly makes your life a lot less fun. And the crazy thing about stress is that it's located in your head. I've been listening to a lot of Eckhart Tolle lately. I think I've mentioned that, but he always says like people get caught up in their own stress, and he says, well, is anything happening to you right now? Is there anything? If you look around, are you in danger? Like really, because that what studies have shown is that we activate the sympathetic nervous system when we're under stress, which is really designed for short bouts of either fight or flight. And when we, and it's not meant to be sustained, but as human beings, what we do is we get this thought, we run it through our head, we attach emotion to it, we keep the emotion going by running the thoughts through our head, and we're attached. And this is what's causing this ongoing, sustained level of stress. And our bodies aren't meant for that. Right? I was talking to one of my friends who works with horses, and she says, if horses get scared and they run from the threat and then they stop and then they just start eating grass again, like nothing ever happened. Right? But we can't do that. We think about, did you see that threat? What if it's following me? What does this mean about me as a person? How am I going to have enough to eat? Like, just all these crazy things come up in our heads. But if you stop and look around, you're probably fine. You're probably not in any danger right now. Hopefully. If you are, turn off this podcast and go take care of it. But really, the crazy thing about all this is that this stress that we feel is located in our heads. And that is something we can control, just as a start, right? Just as a start. And health, when we come back to this idea of health, what is health? What does it mean to be healthy? It's something that I think when you're around someone who's truly healthy, it's something you can feel. It's like almost on this energetic level. It's like they radiate this passion or this vitality, and you can feel it when you're near them. And like I was saying earlier, simply brushing up against someone like that can brighten your entire day. And so I believe that when we're sitting and defining our definition of health, and it's going to look different for every person, we really need to start with that inner state. And we really need to think, what is it that I want to feel on a daily basis? I remember when I went through this meditation program, they had us define a vision, and this goes back to vision, but for four different parts of our life, for our brain, how do we want our mind to be, our emotions, how do we want our emotions to be, our physical state and our spiritual state. And for my brain, I said I wanted an uncluttered mind. For my emotions, I said I wanted to feel at peace. That was my state of being, was peace. For my physical body, I said I wanted to feel rested and nourished. And for my spiritual state, I said I wanted to see all other beings as, you know, as the woven fabric of love that they are at their core. So yeah, still, but what's crazy is I set those visions and started meditating every day, and it's not like it happened, you know, immediately, but that was about a year and a half ago. And I still come back to those visions and I see the dramatic ways in which my life has shifted toward those visions that I set. And so one thing you can do to start, again, coming back to that paradox of yes, we're in control of our, of the way we approach the world, but we are also at the mercy of the world in many ways, right? So how do we approach that paradox? And my response is, let's start with the inner state. So what I would say to recap everything from part A and part B of episode 14 to start is, first of all, let's locate this in the heart, right? Not in the cognitive realm, but in the heart. This question came from the heart, right? And it's creating cognitive dissonance because it's touching on a deep paradox that we live within. Let's take responsibility for what is happening internally. I'll come back to this analogy over and over again, probably, but I thought of this once. It's like, what's happening inside of you is your responsibility. It's not your fault. If a tree falls on your house, that's not your fault, but you still have to take care of it, right? So same thing with whatever's happening internally. All the stuff within you is your responsibility. It's not your fault. A lot of it's inherited. A lot of it is, was conditioning from either early childhood or even ancestral conditioning or epigenetics or however you want to look at it. However, you've inherited these response mechanisms, these emotional patterns, these thought patterns, they're not your fault, but they are your responsibility. So let's start with that internal thing. Let's start to take, by taking ownership of it, you're also empowered to change it. You're empowered to take ownership of your physical state, and you're empowered to say, I deserve something better than this. And that is not selfishness. That is the best thing I can possibly do for myself in the world. And then starting to define what we mean by health. Again, as a doctor, I'm sure there's so many definitions of health out there. But it's really important to say, I'm doing this for myself and I'm defining what health is. And that's going to be the foundation and the context that you can launch from, that you can start to make changes in your external world. But you need to start there. Okay, and next week, we're going to get more into the meat of that question, which is, I don't have the time, energy, or resources to feel like I'm doing this thing, this health thing, justice. So next week, we're going to dive into that. Okay. Thank you so much for listening. This has been episode 14, part A and B, locating perfection. If you have any questions, please don't hesitate to reach out. You can reach me on my website, deeppractices.com, or you can email me, Kate, K-A-T-E, at deeppractices.com. I'm so grateful to have gotten the chance to talk to you all this week, and I can't wait to get back next week.